What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 56. In this podcast, we're going to be talking about how to prep for an ultra marathon, because that's something Tom just did. So now he is an expert. He knows what to do and how to do it. So we're going to get into all the details of that.
But first, we want to talk about some of the changes that we made to our website and about the podcast. So you can find us on Apple Podcasts, just like always, and Google Play and SoundCloud. But now you can also find us on YouTube as well as Stitcher. And then we also added a donate button at the end of, it's towards the bottom of our homepage on our website. And that's just there. So if you guys want to help us financially at all, please consider making a donation. Help us keep this ad free and keep it coming to you. Give us money so we can buy some more books and stuff like that. We do this out of passion. We both love this. So we'll keep doing it no matter what. But hey, it'd be nice to make a little bit on the side.
Exactly. Yeah, it definitely wouldn't hurt. But yeah, I guess this week I'll go first as far as what's new, since you're going to be running the show a lot today. This is, you're going to do all the heavy lifting, but I'm just, this week's been back to normal for me, honestly, for the first time in a while, and it feels awesome. You know, like injuries are all healed up, diet's back on point, I'm able to train every morning. This Monday, so I trained, I talked about it last week, how I started lifting weights again, but it was really like baby stuff.
I think you just did arms or something like really basic.
Yeah, real basic stuff. So was I technically working out? Yeah, but it wasn't like my normal routines. So this week, Monday was the first day I actually got back to it, like my normal sets, my normal reps, everything. And I started with the back day. And it's funny, I woke up Monday morning at 4 a.m. No, it was like 3:50 actually, like a kid on Christmas. I was so excited to lift weights, I couldn't sleep.
You didn't overdo it, did you?
No, okay. Thank God I didn't. Yeah, I'm still being pretty smart, you know, but it was, I don't know, it's such a good feeling to have that passion about something, and when it's taken from you, you really just remember how much you love it. It's almost like in a relationship, like say you and your wife fight, she leaves for a week, you remember, oh, I did like her. You know what I mean? There's a reason I've been with her for 15 years.
Or she goes
years.
On vacation, maybe not. Maybe not a fight.
Yeah, vacation's probably a better one, yeah. But, so yeah, I woke up Monday morning, man, just super pumped, and woke up way too early, like dumb early, and got my workout in, and today's been day 3 of the workouts, did legs this morning, felt great, and I don't know, man, it's just I'm happy, I'm really glad I'm back, and cross my fingers I don't get injured for another, you know, 6 months, you know, because it's going to happen eventually.
It's good, glad you're back to normal.
Yeah, thank you. But, so yeah, we wanted to do a podcast on ultra running because, like Tom's been talking about, he's been prepping one for a while now for the past few months, and that happened this last Sunday, so I assume that's what you're going to talk about right now.
Yeah, so let me first...
And I don't know anything, and by the way, I purposely haven't talked to him about this so I can actually get a natural reaction now.
So the first picture I want to paint for you is just, I want to describe somebody that I saw during the race.
Got it.
So do you remember, have you seen the new Dukes of Hazzard movie? It's not new anymore, it's probably like 10 years old, 15 years old. Jessica Simpson's in it?
Yes.
Okay, so you remember her outfit, like cut-off jeans, like shorts?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like a plaid shirt. So picture that outfit, but like Willie Nelson's character is wearing it.
No, thank you.
Yeah. So there's this guy's running it, and to make it even better, his water bottle, he has like no backpack, nothing else. He has like a Mrs. Buttersworth like syrup container.
Okay.
Filled with water. It's his water.
And do you know if he's running the ultra or if he's just running one of the smaller races? Because you could run multiple races.
There's a 4 mile race. He wasn't doing that. The next one was 10 miles. there's a half, which is like 13. And then I think after the half, it's a marathon and an ultra marathon. So,
well, even a 10 for that guy would probably be really hard.
Well, this 10 was really damn hard.
Okay.
So whatever he was doing, he did not have enough water, or just he just looked so out of character. Yeah. Everybody else has got hydration packs. I got a big ass backpack. I'm carrying over 3 liters of water with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was just completely out of character. I was like, wow, who is this guy?
Yeah. Did you see him on the race at all or no?
Yes, unfortunately. So what's like Mike Tyson's like famous saying about everybody has a plan?
Yeah, until you get hit in the face.
So I got hit in the face like immediately.
Okay.
The first like mile or two, my calf started cramping up.
Oh, that's not good.
This is the flat, easiest part of the race is the first 2 miles and my calves are cramping. I'm like, what the hell is going on? This is way too early to be experiencing any like side tracks.
Yeah.
So I have all my hydration planned out. I have everything figured out.
Like per the mile, like every, you know exactly what you're doing.
By time, and like my mile markers are the aid stations. They're all, there's an aid station every 5 miles. So I'm able to like kind of plan everything out by that. Mm-hmm. My plan just goes to shit. I have to come up with a plan B like on the spot. So, hey, a tip for you, come up with a plan B and plan C beforehand so you're not just coming up with one on the fly.
Yeah.
So I'm just going really slow at the beginning. And you know, I was probably in last place at one point.
Okay.
There's like a couple little girls running this race. And by little, I mean a 7-year-old and a 9-year-old. They passed me.
Wow.
I'm just getting dusted by children.
Do your calves hurt or are they kind of cramping?
They're cramping.
So, okay, that's not good.
That's not good at all. So. Yeah. One thing I've stumbled across, which is kind of weird, is like essential amino acids help me with the cramping.
Okay.
I don't really understand why. I asked a bunch of runners about this earlier, and that's kind of what a couple of them told me to try that I wasn't already doing.
Okay.
And it seemed to work well. I was planning on drinking those like 2 hours into the event, mm-hmm. So I started sipping on one of those bottles way earlier than I wanted to, but it was fine. By about mile, like, 2 or 3, I started feeling a lot better. This happened like within the first mile.
That's not good.
I was cramping. But so I was probably in like damn near last place. Okay. Like after like the first 2 miles. And then by like mile like 4, I started passing a ton of people. And once I passed people, like they didn't pass me.
Never saw them again.
Yeah. So it was kind of a good thing that I like had to go super slow at the beginning because I was able to save a lot.
Okay.
That like first 5 miles is brutal. And then you get to, like, the summit climb, which is, like, an extra mile and a half to, like, the actual top of the mountain. That shit was so damn hard.
Yeah, so if people don't know, this is, what's it called again, the race?
It's Mount Diablo is the name of the mountain.
Okay, so you literally ran up a mountain on a day. How hot was it?
I think it was, like, 99. It was hard to get an exact, like, number because it's in the middle of, like, 3 different cities.
Uh-huh.
So, and I probably ran through all 3 cities
mm-hmm.
since the race was, like, 31 miles.
Let's just say 100-degree weather, you're running up a mountain. So this is no joke.
I mean, luckily, at the beginning of the race, you got some shade.
Okay.
But after about 10 a.m., you're too high up on the mountain to be having any trees around you.
Yeah, what time did it start?
8 a.m.
So it was pretty cool.
Yes. But that lasted till about 9 or 10.
Okay, yeah.
And by 10 a.m., like, you're too high, you're above, like, the trees,
uh-huh.
and then also, like, the sun's directly above you, so you got no shade. Okay. So I had, like, no shade from 10 a.m. on. Everything was going good after I got to the top. It was all downhill from there. So from mile, like, 6.5 to about mile, it was after the third aid station, which was at mile 13. So I want to say about, like, a good solid 8 miles, 9 miles, I had, everything was going perfect. It was just those first couple miles that really sucked. And then
when did your calves stop cramping?
Oh, about mile like 2 or 3.
Okay, so you just fought through it.
I fought through it. I just slowed way down.
Okay.
Started sipping on that drink that I was planning on saving way later on.
Mm.
But yeah, I was fine by then. And then pretty much miles like 3 through like mile 15, everything was going good again. And then at mile 15, I saw the steepest hill I've ever seen in my life. So, like, you know, like, a roller coaster, like, when you're at the top and, like, you look down sometimes, like, it's so steep you can't even see, like, where the trail goes?
Yes.
That's what this hill was like.
No. No, so, thank you.
And I don't have trail shoes. I really need to invest in trail shoes. It's the only time I've ever really needed them.
Okay.
Because that's the only time, like, my shoes were, like, not gripping the ground at all.
You're, like, sliding pretty
much. I'm sliding. I fell on my ass, like, 4 times because there's no way in hell I was falling the other way.
Forward, yeah.
If I fall forward, I was going to die.
You're dead.
I would have, like, fell on my face and slid 50 feet to the bottom of the hill and probably died. If the fall didn't kill me, there's no way I was going to get out of there. I wouldn't be able to walk back up that mountain. Yeah. I'm like, there's nobody out there that's going to help me.
Yeah.
They're in worse shape than me.
So. Yeah, that's bad. Yeah.
Yeah, so I was like, just kind of sliding on my ass, like, the whole way down that thing. It was so bad. And then after that hill, quads just shot.
Yeah.
So I could just tell. I could just feel them. Because
when you're going downhill, with every step, you're pretty much catching yourself.
Yeah, that's so much stress on your quads.
Yeah.
So, like, downhills really kill your quads. So, after that, the second half of the race, because I was only the halfway point, really sucked.
And so, how many, that's at the 15-mile mark?
That was a 15-mile mark.
How many more miles after that?
16.
Okay, so, yeah, that's a lot.
So, I got to the next aid station. There was one at 13. I bypassed the first three aid stations, didn't need anything. I was good. I brought everything with me. So by the time I got to the 18-mile aid station, finally had to, like, refill up everything. And when I got there, I was 15 minutes behind the deadline, the cutoff.
Okay.
And in between that time, this is the part that, like, broke so many people, was between mile 13 and 15, or 13 and 18. Mm. That's where that steep-ass hill was. I passed a lot of people. I saw a lot of people sitting down. I was like, come on, man, you got to get up. You got to just keep on swimming. Mm-hmm. You know, like, from Finding Nemo?
Finding Nemo, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I say in my head.
Oh, so do you guys talk to each other on the race?
Yeah.
Oh, so you guys are, like, all kind of buddies?
Pretty much, because everybody is out there, like, fuck this mountain, why am I here? Okay.
That's cool.
I was talking to somebody who was just mother bleeping one of his friends the whole time. He's a runner. He's never done a trail race. He just did the San Francisco Marathon, so his friend told him he's going to do this one. He's like, oh, yeah, I can do that, no problem. Doesn't train in the heat, because San Francisco is 40 degrees cooler than this.
Yeah.
Doesn't train in these, like, type of hills or anything. So he was not prepared at all for this.
Yeah.
He was out there dying. He was so pissed off. I was going with him for a little bit, but I was like, I know he didn't make the cutoff.
Got it.
And I was like, I'm making this cutoff.
Yes,
I'm
you
not,
are.
I'm not training this hard and going through this much pain.
For nothing.
To not make it.
Yeah.
So I make the 18-mile cutoff by, like, 15 minutes, and then stop there, just refill everything as fast as I can. Go to the next aid station.
Do the people at the aid station tell you, like, yeah, you're slow as shit?
They just tell you, they just kind of tell you, like, oh, hey, this is where you're at. Like, you need to make it to the next aid station by this time.
Will they, if you get to an aid station so late, will they just stop you?
They'll tell you, like, what you have to do. So, at the next aid station is right before you go back up to the summit.
Mm-hmm.
So, when you get there, it's mile 21. So, your two choices are 5 miles downhill back to the end, or you go do the summit again. And I made that aid station by 5 minutes. Beat the cutoff by 5 minutes.
Okay.
So pretty much everybody after me...
Too late.
They had to go downhill.
Got it. Okay.
And that was also, like, kind of the point where it's like, okay, make or break.
Mm-hmm.
You're either doing the marathon or you're doing the ultra.
Because this summit sucks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I made it. Like, I didn't even have to think about it. There was a woman there and she was, like, really thinking about it. I was like, there isn't a thought in my mind right now. Yeah, like, I was just like, give me whatever I need, fill up, gone.
And so what all do they have at the aid station? Just water?
They have water, like an electrolyte mix. It's like, it's not Gatorade, but it's something similar to that.
Okay.
It's a better version of that.
Like in cups?
No, they have, like, pitchers, and they have, like, not buckets, but, you know, like, those Gatorade things that you see on the sidelines of football games?
NFLs, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what those
are. So you just fill up your stuff with it?
Yeah. Okay. Or actually, they help you out. There's, like, 4 or 5 people there.
Oh, that's cool.
And they'll fill it for you.
Oh, cool.
And they have a bunch of snacks and stuff. So I wasn't really eating any of the snacks. My stomach was messed up just because of how high intensity this event was and how hot it was.
No appetite.
I was eating a little bit and my stomach was so messed up from it.
Mm-hmm.
Digestion is not going down good.
Got it.
My girlfriend was telling me, like, at the finish line, so many people were throwing up.
Yeah.
At almost every aid station I passed by, there were people throwing up. So I was just like, yeah. I'm like, I'm glad, like, I'm so fat adapted.
Yes.
That, like, my body just uses my own fat for fuel.
Your body had an actual option.
Yeah, like, I don't really need to rely on all this stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, I did that, and I didn't finish last. There were 2 people that came in after me, but I don't really care about that. I care that I finished.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's so how was the second summit? Was it harder?
It was hard.
But you knew what was coming at least.
Yeah. And at that point, like, the closer and closer you get to the top, it's just like you're catching your second wind. It's like, yeah, the hard part's done.
Yeah.
I kind of underestimated how far it was after you got to the summit. I thought it was going to be like all smooth sailing.
Summit then coast.
Yeah, but it wasn't really, because there was a good, after you do the summit, there's a good like 3 or 4 miles where it's kind of like rolling hills.
Okay.
So like, yeah, there is a lot of downhill, but there's still some uphills.
Okay.
And that was not that easy. And like I said earlier, that big ass downhill killed my quads. So there was no running fast.
Yeah, you just no options.
Yeah, even going downhill, like I tried to just kind of go with the flow and just kind of like let my body weight carry me. But I just was so out of it, just didn't feel comfortable running that fast.
Okay.
I did see something that kind of scared me. I saw like a wild boar, like mom with like 3 piglets, boarlets. I don't know what's
something.
Whatever the baby boars, whatever.
Small pigs.
Yeah, whatever they're called. And if you know anything about boars, those things are vicious.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw this about mile 28.
You're slow as shit.
I got nothing in me. Yeah. If this thing charges me, I'm just going to just take it.
Yeah, just say I'm dead.
I'm not climbing a tree. Uh-huh. I'm not going to be able to outrun this thing. No. Like, I'm just going to die.
Like, literally your weakest point.
Yeah, just hopefully it has some mercy on me. Uh-huh. But whatever, it saw me and ran. Because it wasn't even more than 100 yards away. Wow. Like, I got a real good look at it. I saw all the piglets or whatever they're called.
Yeah.
And I was like, thank God this thing ran away from me.
Damn.
Because I was like, yeah, this is...
That could have been bad.
I'd rather see, like... pretty much anything else out on the trail than one of those.
Oh, God. Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
So when you finished, were they like, yo, congratulations, you made it. Like, big deal. Was Kaylee there, your fiancé?
Yeah, okay. My fiancé was there, and my parents were both there.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. They were waiting a little bit longer than they wanted to.
Really?
Because it was really hot out there. And yeah. I mean, there's quite a bit of shade, but still.
Yeah.
Waiting out and... damn near 100 degree weather is not the best.
No, definitely not.
But at least they had snacks and everything out there for them, so it's not that big of a deal.
So what was your official time?
10 hours.
Damn, so you're out there 10 hours?
Yeah. Holy so shit. I wanted to finish in 7 hours was my goal.
Mm-hmm.
But if I would have finished in 7 hours, I would have been third.
Oh, yeah. So what was the fastest time?
6 hours by a 50-year-old.
Jeez.
The next person was like 6.5. And then 7 hours, and then there was quite a few at 7.5. Pretty much, like, really, like, 7.5 is when, like, people really started coming in.
Okay.
And then there was a lot between 7.5 and pretty much when I finished 10.
Damn, so 6 is damn near half your time. That's crazy fast for a 50-year-old.
Yeah, and he was, like, the only one. He beat the next person by almost a half hour.
Man, that's impressive.
Yeah.
Jeez. Do you know that guy?
No.
Just a dude, huh?
The second place was a 46-year-old woman.
Okay.
And then after that, it's a bunch of 30-year-olds. Okay. Know, kind of mixed after that.
Yeah. But man, congratulations for your first one you finished. That's dope.
Yeah. That was, it's the second one I've done, but...
Well, yeah, I guess your first big trail thing, I guess, with a hill. You ran up a mountain. Yeah.
Yeah, this was... the one I did in, I don't know if that was March or April, uh-huh. was 6,700 feet in elevation. Mm-hmm. This was damn near 8,000.
Yeah.
But that was in springtime, lots of shade, 60, 70 degree weather. This is the complete opposite.
Yeah, it's like multiple challenges.
Yeah. So I was going to... this was like a test run to see if I can do 100K or mm-hmm. not. Not going to do it this year. I'm going to...
yeah.
This is the beginning of my off season, and then I'm going to like really train for it. I'm going to, like, in the next couple months while I'm, like, kind of just recovering, I'm going to, like, figure out my schedule, what time I want to do a 50K, what time I want to do a 100K,
mm-hmm.
and if those go smooth, maybe I'll do either a 100-miler or, like, an easy 24-hour mm-hmm. race, because if I do a 24-hour race, I can probably do 100 miles within that.
Okay.
Because the 24-hour ones are usually flat.
Were you limping when you came in here?
My legs are still sore.
Your legs are still sore, okay.
It's my quads that are sore.
To this day. And that was 3 days ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, so I've been doing foam rolling every night, pretty much every chance I get.
Painful as shit, I bet.
Oh, I want to cry when I'm doing my quads. Yeah. Like, I'm not exaggerating. Like, I literally want to cry.
Yeah, that sounds painful.
Yeah, so I mean, like, I'm glad I did. I'm glad I finished. So 33 people finished.
Okay.
Over 60 signed up for it.
Oh, wow, so 50% pretty much.
Yeah. So yeah. It's like, I do feel kind of good for finishing.
For sure.
Yeah. And there's just so many people that I passed along the way. Like, there was one guy I was talking to for a couple minutes. And we were just both just like, you know, just... I was venting. I guess he wasn't. I was just, man, this shit sucks. Why are we out here? Blah, blah, blah. Why me? I just need to get that out of my system. And I'm like, all right, I'm good.
Let's go.
I'm going to start jogging. He's like, no. Not today. He's just like, I'll catch up with you. And he never did.
Never did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, as soon as I see something that looks flat, I'm going to start running. And that's pretty much what happened.
Yeah.
You walk a lot of the uphills, Because even if you jog up the uphills, you're not going that much faster.
Yeah.
Like, I'll speed walk up the uphills and, like, save a lot of energy.
Yeah. And time won't be that much of a factor.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of how it went. I'm glad I finished. There's only about 10 people that signed up for the marathon, but they had, like, over 30 finishers for the marathon.
So from the ultras?
Yeah. So, everybody got cut down. And then a lot of people I don't even think finished.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, I don't blame them. It was hot as shit.
It sounds hard.
That elevation was a monster.
Yeah.
Oh, and the 7-year-old and the 9-year-old, I did pass them again.
Thank you.
They didn't dust me. They passed me on, like, the flat part, and then going up to the, up, like, the big hill, I got passed them somewhere along.
What were they doing, do you know? Just a marathon?
You know, I did check. I think they were doing the half marathon.
The half marathon, okay.
Yeah, they were with their parents, and they have, I guess, a 3-year-old younger sister who did the 4-miler.
Jeez, man, it's a fit family.
It's a running family.
Jeez, yeah. Okay.
I mean, I guess that's cool. I mean, that's... To me, that's child abuse.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Yeah, I'd rather have my kids lift weights, but sure.
Just knowing how hot it was out there. But honestly, that early in the morning, if you were only doing, like, the half marathon, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, you're done by lunch. You know what I mean?
And most of that part of the trail was shaded. I just didn't get to spend that much time on that part of the trail.
Yeah. That's really cool, man. That's super cool.
Yeah, so that's kind of the... what this podcast is going to be about if you want to do one of these incredibly stupid events like I just did.
So hold on, your marker for your next, if you're going to do 100K, would be to do a 50K in 7 hours. Is that still your, like, goal? Next year?
I'm going to look at them. The one I was looking at doing was in mid-October, and that had a 16.5-hour cutoff.
Okay.
So with a lot of these races, like, they're pretty strict with their cutoff. So if you come in at 17 hours, even if you run the whole thing, you might not get any credit for it.
Okay.
So I talked to somebody out there who ran, the first time he ran his 100 miles, he came in 30 minutes after the cutoff, didn't get anything for it.
That sucks.
So he ran 100 miles, didn't get any of the awards for it, didn't get...
Like, not on the website?
Not on the website, nothing.
Yeah.
And it's like, damn, that sucks.
That's hard.
It took him over 30... The cutoff was 33 hours, took him 33.5 hours. So just imagine how hard that is.
Over a day.
Yeah.
Jeez, man.
And he didn't make it, so... Yeah, and he told me it took him about 3 years to, like, properly train for it.
Get dialed in.
Yeah. I don't think it'll take me that long. I'm hoping to do it next year. Especially because I've been doing a lot of, like, learning and, like, reading on this type of topic on how to train for it. But unfortunately, I didn't do all of it before I started training. Learn something, try it. Oh, learn something new, and then I'd try that, and it's like, oh, well, I should have done this step first and not this, and just kind of, our training was all out of whack.
Yeah.
So I got a pretty good understanding of how to do this now. I've been looking at the best of the best, how they do it, what matches with my schedule, my style of eating, all that type of thing.
Yeah.
So I came out with a really good plan, and I'm going to implement the plan next year.
Okay, that's cool. And so this is going to be partly what this podcast is based on.
Yeah, this is basically what I'm going to do next year going into it.
Got it.
So this season's done. Next season starts pretty much, I haven't decided if it's going to be November 1st or January 1st, one or the other, depending on, like, the schedule I find.
Okay.
So the next 2 months, off season, I'm going to do no lifting weights, no high intensity, anything.
Recover.
Recover, recover, recover. Lots of yoga, lots of walking.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing that's going to get my heart rate, like, above, like, 150. Mm-hmm. I'm taking it, like, super easy.
Good.
So I just, like, I did a lot of damage to my body the last couple months, and I'm going to do a lot more damage in the next year. So I'm going to really give it a lot of time to just recover and just kind of get out of my prime and just get my mind right.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, we're all about health. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, me too, and all this type of stuff. And running, going outside and running for 11 hours in 100-degree weather is not healthy. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're putting a lot of stress on your body.
Yeah.
So that's why it's important right now he recovers. Like, he needs it.
Oh, yeah. Like, my...
Because if you try to keep this pace, you would burn out. Even though you're in your prime, you can't keep this pace for that long.
No, not at all. And just, like, for example, of some injuries that you can get that you don't even realize, I don't have full feeling in my big toes yet. They're coming back.
Wow, really?
They're coming back, but they're not quite there yet.
When did you realize they were numb?
When they stopped hurting in the race.
Okay.
I felt like a blister coming up under my left big toe. I don't know when that was. And then 5 miles later, I just didn't feel it anymore.
Yeah.
And I realized, like, oh, hey, my toe stopped hurting. I was like, well, that blister didn't go away.
Definitely not.
And I know I stubbed my toes a few times. Like, I didn't break them. They're not bruised or anything. Mm-hmm. They're just... it's just something that happens. All that repeated pounding on the pavement, rocks, all that stuff. Just kind of...
Yeah, we talked about David Goggins, like, weeks ago and how, like, multiple times his shoes would fill up with blood. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, it happens. Your feet get torn to shit.
Yeah, so I'm just trying to... really just recover. I've trained hard, recover hard.
Yep.
Come up with a plan. After I have that plan, get into it.
Yeah, that's smart. That's how you got to do it. Yeah.
So the first thing we're going to talk about on how to prep for an ultra is just the training part. I mean, that's obviously one of the biggest parts. So one of the first things that you should really work on are your long, slow runs. I mean, hey, that's what this event is. It's going to be a long-ass endurance race.
Yeah, not a sprint.
Yeah, so you really want to work on this. So by long, slow runs... I think everybody should do them in a fastest state. It's the best way to increase your own fat oxidation. So, hey, if you're going to be running for 3 hours plus, you want to be the best you possibly can be at burning your own body fat for fuel.
Yeah.
You have almost like an unlimited like fuel source on your body in the form of fat.
And actually, before this, we talked about a guy named Zach Bitter, who he's the all-time best ultra runner right now, right?
Yeah, so over the weekend on Saturday, he just set the world record for fastest 100 miles. He set that at 11 hours and 19 minutes, 13 seconds.
And to put that in perspective, you did a 50 in 10.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So he did three times the distance and an hour extra.
That's crazy.
And he actually set two records. He like did an overachievement. He ran for 12 hours and set the most distance within a 12-hour time period, which is like 104 miles, 105, something like that.
So two birds, one stone.
Yeah.
But we talked about how you know a little bit of how good of a fat burner he is, and that it's crazy.
So at like 80 to 85% of his VO2 max pace, he's able to use like 90, I think it's like 99%. It's in the high 90% fat. A typical athlete, like if you just find like an average person that's on a high carb diet, they're probably using 50-50 at that point. They might even be using like 40% fat, 60% carbs. So like most typical people are going to be 50-50. He's at 99%. So just in perspective, you have even somebody that's super lean like him, he's got like no body fat on him. He's really skinny.
Yeah.
He's got probably over 20,000 calories of stored body fat on him compared to maybe 2,000 calories of carbs. Yeah. Maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't even think that.
I mean, if he's like topped out to the tip.
Yeah. Because he's a pretty small guy. So like, yeah, like a bigger guy, like with a lot of muscle, like you probably have 2,500 maybe. Yeah,
a little more.
I mean, that's still not even a big difference and you're like twice his size.
Yep.
So it's not like you're going to have a ton of carbs. Like even a big ass bodybuilder is not going to have 10,000. No, they probably have 3.
Yeah, that's true.
So like there's a very finite amount of like glycogen, that's glucose stores that you can have on you, versus fat, you can have tons of it.
That's
so,
why like using fat for fuel and being fat adapted is such an advantage.
Oh yeah. A lot of people call it like the bonk proof diet when it comes to like an ultra endurance sports like this. And bonking, what that really is when your body, when you start becoming deprived of glucose, your brain tells you to shut down because your brain needs a certain amount of glucose. So if you run out of glucose for your brain, you're going to die or you're going to suffer a lot of brain damage. So before you get to that point, your body will shut you down.
Yeah, and you won't have a choice.
Yeah, it's people refer to it as hitting the wall, stuff like that. That's what that is. So if you're able to use all this fat, you're able to keep all this glucose for your brain health.
Yeah.
That's why training in a fastest state and increasing your fat oxidation is so important.
So important.
So the best way to do that is make sure you're in that like high fat burning zone is figure out your max heart rate, which is like 180 minus your age. So for me, I try to stay under 150, try to stay in the 140 to 145 range. That way, in case it does creep up, I have a little bit of wiggle room to play with.
And you wear a heart monitor?
Yeah, I have everybody's got like a Fitbit, Garmin, Apple Watch. There's so many different devices out there that track them.
Okay.
So you can just use pretty much anything. I mean, if you really want to get super technical with it, the best things, there's like chest straps that check your heart rate. You can get that. But I mean, hey, there's so many heart rate devices out there that are pretty cheap.
Yeah.
You can even buy like an off-brand one off of like Amazon for like 10, 15 bucks. They're not expensive.
Okay.
So what else these like long, slow runs do is they increase your lactate threshold. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So Well, actually, you talk about that. I know we talked about lactate. I guess it was in the Gluconeogenesis podcast, or we've done a podcast already on the endurance. What was it about? Just endurance training, I think?
I think, yeah, just ways to build up your endurance. That was 40, 50 podcasts ago.
Exactly, it was a long time ago. So I know a little bit about lactate, but it's similar to, I talk about with a high meat diet, you have a urea cycle, which is how our body processes protein, or specifically processes nitrogen. So when you're on a high meat diet, eventually your body will just process nitrogen better. Your urea cycle will get more efficient, so you'll be able to eat more food. And I've noticed that more myself, and you've noticed that more yourself. You can just eat more meat now.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You don't get as full as fast. So similar with this, is training on these long, slow runs, they increase your lactate threshold. Your body just gets better at recycling lactate. And all lactate is really is pyruvate, which is an end product of glycolysis with a hydrogen attached to it. So it's almost like a buffer in your muscles, so hydrogen doesn't build up too much in your muscles, because that will kind of act as, I think it's called an allosteric inhibitor for enzymes. So it'll kind of stop enzymes from happening inside your muscles, so your muscles won't contract pretty much. And so by training and doing these long runs, your body gets better at recycling lactate and just giving your body the energy needed to keep your muscles contracting.
Yeah, exactly. So if you get too much lactate built up, you're not going to be able to contract your muscles as much. So you're going to be forced to slow down. So staying under your lactate threshold, that's at 180 minus age. I mean, these are just simple measurements. That's a pretty good guess.
Yeah.
You're going to be better at adapting to it, better at converting that lactate back. If you try and go too hard, you're going to have too much lactate and you're going to really be forced to slow down. Maybe you're good for an hour, but once you hit that like hour 15 mark, you're going to hit a wall and you're going to be dead.
Yep.
So that's why you want to really like make sure you stay low. And it's not like you're going to be like forced to stay at a slow speed your entire life. Like the better shape you get in, the more training you do at this level, the faster you'll be able to do at the same lactate threshold. You'll be able to run 6 miles an hour instead of 5 miles an hour, while keeping that same heart rate, while keeping that same like lactate threshold.
Exactly.
So you will increase over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you want to know more about lactate threshold and just lactate like recycling, you can look at the Cori cycle, C-O-R-I, and that's kind of, that'll give you a little bit more science into the background of it if you're interested.
Yeah, so there's a couple other benefits of doing this like long, slow type of training. So obviously, if you're going slow, it's the best time to improve your form. You don't want to be trying to work on your running form going full speed. It's better to be doing that while you're going slow. So if you're going to be running for 20 plus miles, you want to be as efficient as you possibly can be. So making sure your arms are like nice and tight.
And that's actually a pet peeve of yours, because you say you see people run and you see their heads bobbing around and their bodies twisting and you're like, oh, I can't stand that shit.
Oh, well, yeah.
It's just a wasted movement.
You just, all the time when I see people out there jogging and stuff like that, yeah, I see people with their arms moving side to side, which is just a waste of movement. You see people going so vertical. You don't want to be doing any vertical movement. Like, why? You're trying to move forward. Like, we're not clearing hurdles out here.
Yeah.
So, like, just kind of, like, stuff like that. It's just, like, I can really just tell the difference of, like, oh, hey, that guy's a runner, and that person's just running to lose weight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you can really just tell the difference. So, yeah, that's the best time to try to work on your form is while you're going with these slow paces. Another good thing about these is why I talked about this earlier, how I had like a blister on my big toe. You want to build up these calluses instead of blisters. Cause hey, having a blister, I'm so glad my foot went numb. Cause if it didn't, like that would have been really painful and that'd have been hard to keep going.
That could have stopped you.
Oh, definitely. Like you need to have that, like David Goggins, like willpower to overcome like blisters on your feet to be running for 20 plus miles. Like, you know, like that's not the easiest thing to do.
Yeah. This type of training, it calluses your body, but also calluses your mind. So that's the trick.
Yeah, and then something else that I'm going to talk about the next type of training is VO2 max. So this is really like the best measurement of any type of endurance type of athlete. It's basically like how much oxygen you're able to utilize. So like the higher the VO2 max, generally the better endurance shape you're in. There are other factors that are going to play into it as well. Something like your form and just kind of some other factors like how fast you are. But VO2 max is a great way to measure if you're actually getting in better shape or not.
Well, yeah, to touch on that, because we talked about lactate earlier. Lactate is a byproduct of anaerobic metabolism. So that's metabolism without the presence of oxygen. And that kicks in because in these high intensity, or just working out in general, right, where your body is using a lot of oxygen, oxygen is going to be that limiting factor. So the better your body's ability to use oxygen, the more ATP you're going to be able to produce, and the longer you're going to be able to run.
Yeah, that's a great point. And one thing I don't like the term anaerobic and aerobic, mm-hmm. because you're always using both.
Yes.
But, I mean, like, sometimes you're using a lot more of one than the other.
Yeah.
But you always are using both.
Yeah, like, your heart's always going to be using aerobic. There's always going to be an oxygen supply there for sure. But yeah, that's just the terms used.
Yeah, those are, like, the basic ones.
Yeah.
So, what the long slow runs do is they work on your AV oxygen difference. That's your, like, atrial, your arterial venous oxygen difference. So, basically, it's just measuring how well are your muscles extracting the oxygen from your blood. So basically, while you're working on this type of long, slow running, the thing that really matters is how much oxygen can you extract from that blood to the muscles that need it for, so you can do that cellular respiration.
And the more, the better.
More, the better, exactly.
Yeah, because glycolysis, you're pretty much only going to get 2 ATP out of every glucose molecule. But if you have the oxygen present, enough oxygen, we can run that glucose through the Krebs cycle or the citric acid cycle, whatever we want to call it, and you're going to get 30 plus ATP. So the performance boost from being a better oxygen consumer, like literally allowing your muscles to consume more oxygen, is like over 10x more performance.
And this is like a really big factor if you're going to be competing in like Lake Tahoe or somewhere else at elevation, because there's going to be less oxygen in the air.
Yep.
And that's part of the reason why our body makes those adaptations, has more red blood cells when we're at elevation. It's because there's less oxygen in the air, so we need to be able to extract more. So, yeah, that's a really big factor if you're going to be training in Tahoe or something like that. But so the other way to really improve your VO2 max is a much larger factor, especially at like sea level or pretty much anywhere else, is HIIT style training.
Ugh, hate HIIT training.
I like it because it's only 10 minutes.
Yeah, but it's a hard 10 minutes.
Yeah. But I'd rather do a hard 10 minutes than a semi-hard 3 hours.
Okay. Good point.
You're not doing those long training runs like me.
So. Yeah, that's true.
So this is the best way to increase your VO2 max, like I said. So you want to be training at or near like your max heart rate. So this is going to increase your stroke volume, your max heart rate, and those combined is your cardiac output. So basically, like, your stroke volume is how much heart your heart is pumping through.
How much would like a normal max heart rate be for like an average person? Does it vary that much?
So like 180 to 220, somewhere around there.
Okay.
So that's, it kind of just depends. You'd have to go to an exercise lab to really get it tested.
Okay.
And I don't even know if they'd really be able to figure it out. Like, they basically put you on a treadmill, super high incline, and have you sprinting up that thing until you basically fall off of it. And that's how they would measure it.
Okay.
So you can do that test at home if you'd want to, but I mean, like, it's not the easiest.
Okay.
So basically, just like training at your highest intensity, just your own perceived effort, you can kind of figure out where you're going to be at.
Okay.
So the higher the heart rate, the better. This is also a great way to improve your like speed and your strength. Like, if you ever see any sprinters in the Olympics, they're all really muscular people.
Jacked.
Yeah.
And on steroids.
Most of them are. Yeah, and just adding to that, have you ever seen a fat sprinter?
No.
That's because sprinting is, like, the best way to, like, burn body fat.
Yep.
It's like your body gets the signals, hey, I need to be fast. You know what's not going to make me fast? Carrying around all this extra body fat.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's a really great way to get shredded.
Yeah, actually, I just, there's this lady I know from work. She's a fitness competitor, really in real good shape, and she posted this picture on Instagram of a hill. It was, like, a pretty steep hill. And she's like, I'm going to do 5x5, 5 up, 5 down. And I was like, no, thank you. I was like, fuck that. But that's a great, great workout.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of my favorite things to do. That's normally what I do for HIIT. I'll also do box jumps. Mountain climbers is like a good option you can do at home. I'll do like the bike and just kind of do sprints on the bike, mm-hmm. depending. It depends on where I'm at. Like, if I'm at the gym, I'll end my workout with either box jumps or on the bike, because I can't do sprints in the middle of the gym.
No.
You know, there's other people around. I can't do them in the parking lot. I'll get hit by a car.
Yeah.
So just kind of do something like that. But yeah, I love the hill.
That's a great one. Yeah, that's really hard too.
And running up a hill is a great way to decrease your impact on your joints, because you're not taking as long as strides. So you don't have all that like extra force, and you got kind of gravity on your side instead of going against you.
Yeah.
Sprinting downhill, horrible for your joints. And if you fall, you're going to get messed up.
You're screwed.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why you walk downhill.
Yeah, HIIT training, it can be free. Like, all you gotta do is find a hill like we just talked about. you can go outside on a flat surface, go to a track at a high school, middle school, anything like that. Just do sprints out there.
But how many times, I know I don't know how many times I've had this conversation with people, because I recommend HIIT to people a lot of the times because it is super effective.
Yeah.
It's like extremely effective. But some, all the time, Mike, you know who you are. Yeah, I sprint on the treadmill for 60 seconds and then I rest for a minute. I'm like, bro, first of all, I don't even think you can sprint. Sorry. But you, even if you could, you can't sprint for 60 seconds.
Usain Bolt can't sprint for 60
seconds. Yeah, I can't sprint for 60 seconds. I was like, so why, like, you're running.
Yeah.
And you might perceive it as running fast, but it ain't that fast, trust me, sorry. You know what I mean? Like, you can't run that long.
Yeah, sprint is, to me, a sprint is 10 seconds long. But if you want to expand that, I would say 10 to 30 seconds.
Yeah, because if you go from in that 90% range, you can draw it out.
Yeah, so like 10 to 30 is like the max. Anything more than 30 seconds, you're not training at your max heart rate. Uh-huh. You're not training at your highest speed. And that's the thing here. You're really trying to improve at like your highest speed.
That's the whole point.
Yeah. So you're trying to go as hard as you possibly can be. If you're doing something for 40 seconds, 60 seconds, you're not going that hard.
No, sorry, you're not.
Mm. That might be moderately high, but that's not high intensity.
No, it's not.
Yeah. So we just talked about two completely polar opposites of when it comes to training. And that's pretty much where your training should be. It should either be long and slow or short and intense. Don't get in that middle ground. That middle ground is worthless.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to be improving your lactate threshold if you're in that middle ground. You're not going to be improving your VO2 max that much if you're in that middle ground. So, like, why bother? Like, you're pretty much just kind of wasting your time. You won't be getting as much adaptations. So the next thing, like, this is, like, your specialty. Yeah. Strength training.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Yeah, so the cardio stuff, I half like cardio. I do cardio every day. Some people don't think I do, but I do. I think it's important, especially in any sort of regimen, you know, to incorporate cardio. But I'm all about, obviously, weight training. If I could just, if I could be a bodybuilder, if I had the genetics or the money to buy enough drugs to be a bodybuilder, I 100% would. You know what I mean? That's just a fact. That's been a dream of mine forever. Dragon Ball Z and, like, the Hulk from, like, body dysmorphia. Like, I really do. But,
We also grew up that generation with all the action heroes. We're just Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Swole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even true. The guys that weren't that big. Like, they made them look to be gigantic.
Yes, they did. Yeah, like, you ever seen Sylvester Stallone? Yeah. Not that big of a guy, but in the movies, he looks huge.
Oh, yeah, he looks huge. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And how we were, like, we were 12 or 13 when we started training.
Oh, we were really young.
Like, we have grew up in a gym.
Yeah.
Like, straight up, we really did. Our first jobs were at a gym, all that stuff, GNC, all those things. But, yeah, as far as weight training, specifically for this stuff, you want to stick with heavy weights, low reps, and stick with multi-joint movements. So, the basics. I'm talking bench, I'm talking deadlifts, I'm talking squats. Like, that's going to be your bread and butter.
Yeah, you really want to be working on your strength. Like, save the endurance training for your runs. If you're a runner, you're already going to have good endurance. You don't need to be working on your endurance in the weight room. So many people like try to do, find out like a moderate weight and do like 30 reps with it because they're trying to improve their endurance. Guess what? Your legs got pretty good endurance for running for 2 hours on Saturday. You don't need to be working on that here.
Yeah.
What your legs don't have is strength. Mm-hmm. And that strength is really going to come into play when it comes to like injury prevention and like running up and down those hills.
Yeah, you're saying every step you run, you're pushing your whole body off the earth. Like, you need to be strong.
Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that, like, if you look at a lot of like good runners, they don't look strong at all.
No.
And that's, if you're going to be burnt out or you're going to be dealing with like overuse injuries, it's because you haven't been taking the time in the gym. And that's one thing that really a lot of people need to be working on to prevent those overuse injuries and stuff like that.
Yep.
So there's a few different like methods that I recommend. One is negatives. I recommend negatives if you don't have access to a lot of stuff or if you're just kind of new at working out. So negatives is you go as slow as you possibly can on the way down. And then when you get to the bottom, you just explode up. So, hey, if you're moving at like a turtle pace and you get injured, you're obviously doing something wrong.
Yes.
Like, it's really hard to have poor form if you're going super duper slow.
It is. Yeah. So recently, when I recently hurt my back, I guess maybe it was like a month ago now, I was doing a standing military press and I was doing heavy weight and I was exploding the fuck out of the weight because it was too heavy for me to do negative. So okay. I was moving so fast. I didn't notice injury mid set.
Yeah.
I didn't notice it until it was done. That's a problem. So what negatives really means is you make light weights feel heavy. So even if you're strong as a horse, you know, and you can bench press 400 pounds, if you put 225 on the bar and you take 30 seconds to lower that bar to your chest, eventually that 225 is going to feel real heavy.
Yeah, like in, another way to do this is just with like body weight stuff.
Yep.
If you don't have access to a bench press, like you're traveling or something, do a 60-second push-up or a 30-second push-up.
Sounds painful.
It is incredibly difficult. You're going to do like two of those.
Yeah.
You can do those with squats. You can do those one-legged squats.
You do pistol squats like that,
pistol
right?
Pistol squats. Not that super slow pace.
Oh, I can't do those at all. So, yeah.
I can do them, but like not... I go slow because like I need to balance.
Okay.
So you're kind of forced to be negative, but it's not like 20 seconds. It's like 5 to 10.
That's still impressive.
Yeah, those are hard. So there's a lot of ways you can do it if you don't have access to equipment. Like, just because you don't have weights or don't have a gym, that's not an excuse.
No, it's not.
Another thing that's great to use is, like, a thing called drop sets. So that's if you have, let's say you're leg pressing, you got two plates on each side. After you finish your set, either you or your workout partner takes off a 45 from each side, and then you do an immediate set right after that with no rest in between. And what that will do is it'll fatigue more of your motor units. So what a motor unit is just like a group of like muscle fibers that are working together. So the ones that have the most endurance are the ones that are recruited first. And the ones that have the least amount of endurance are your stronger ones, and they're recruited last. And if your strongest ones are recruited, that means all the ones that are weaker than it are recruited too.
That sounds so backwards, that logic.
Yeah.
It is, but it's true.
And one way to think about this is if you ever like reach into your fridge and you're trying to pick up like a milk carton or an orange juice carton, and when you think it's full, but it's like empty, and you like break it and like slam it to the top, that's because you recruited more motor units than were required.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how you know. Like that's kind of what's going on with that. So by doing like a drop set, when you do like that heavy weight, you're only fatiguing your strongest motor units. You still have a bunch of other motor units that can still be worked. So if you take off that weight, strip it down by half, and then you keep going, now you're fatiguing a lot more of them. And you can keep doing that over and over again. You get to a point where you just want to cry. So it's like there are painful, but that's a great way to like just really just destroy your legs.
Exactly.
Or any part of your body.
Any part, yeah. It's a great way to increase intensity. It's a great way to increase just stimulus from training.
Yeah, and if you're going to be training for 3+ hours on one of these runs, you want to be fatiguing everything as possible.
Yep.
What this training program is about is just, you know, making everything as optimal as possible. Don't waste any time. So if you are like in a very time crunch situation, this is like a 10-minute workout. This will kill you real quick. You'll be sore. The first time I did this, I was sore for like 3 or 4 days after it. You were never able to really figure it out very well.
No, I'm sure couldn't do this. A little too much of a dum-dum for this one.
I think you're probably just going too hard.
Oh, I for sure was. Yeah. I actually did recommend this to somebody at work, and he did it, and he did it with deadlifts, and he liked it. Said he was really sore. So it's effective.
Oh yeah, definitely. And you can do it with pretty much any body part, but we'll use deadlifts as an example.
Mm-hmm.
So you pick a weight that you can do about 8 to 10 reps with, and you stop one rep short of your max. So let's say your max is 10, you stop at 9, put it on the bottom, take a few deep breaths, wait like 10 to 15 seconds, and then you pick it back up and do another one. So the next one is probably going to be 1 or 2 less. So the first one was 9, second one's going to be 8 or 7. Set it back down, another 10, 15 second rest, and then you keep doing that over and over again until you can barely pick it up one time. And then that's your entire workout.
Yeah.
In that time, you probably did about 9 or 10 sets. That's usually a good like strength training program. I normally go for 10 to 15, depending on what body part I'm working on. I don't usually do much more than that.
Me either.
Maybe 10 if I'm going to do some HIIT training after.
It's just condensed down into, I don't know how long it takes. What?
Like a 5-minute period.
Yeah. So it's just, it's honestly half cardio, half training. It's real. When I did this, I did it with deadlifts. After, I forget how many rounds I did. I think I did 3 rounds. Like not a lot. I was like seeing stars. I was like, oh, I can't do this. Yeah.
That did happen to me with deadlifts before.
Yeah.
Like I just, like, I really had to, I think probably it took like 20, 25 seconds rest in between to like really like, don't pass out.
Yeah, don't pass out. Yeah.
So any training program should include all of these. That's that strength training, that HIIT, and that long, slow runs. So if you have a weakness in one particular area, definitely focus on that more. So you obviously want to have a lot of long, slow runs because that's going to be like...
That's what this is.
That's what you're training for. So you definitely want to make sure you're getting those in. And then maybe get one HIIT training session a week, one strength training session a week. Or you can even combine them. You can do your strength training, and then right after you're done with your strength training... And with some HIIT. Like you can combine them, stuff like that. One thing that I like to do, because it's hard for me to get those long, slow runs in, is I schedule them back to back Saturday, Sunday. So I don't run during the middle of the week at all, but I do 20 miles on Saturday, another 10 to 15 on Sunday, and then rest pretty much the rest of the week. Somewhere between Tuesday and Thursday, I do a strength training session. Right after that strength training session, I do my HIIT. Yeah. Something along those lines.
Mm-hmm. No, people always say you're too busy to do it, but you can find the time. You can make this fit your schedule. But like you said, you hit it on the hard on the weekends and you rest throughout the week. Like, if you're going to be training this hard, you have to rest. That's going to be important.
Yeah. I mean, hey, if you do have the time where you can get those two-hour runs in 3 or 4 days out of the week, that's great. But not everybody has that type of schedule. So you just kind of have to figure out what works for you. But you do need adequate rest. Like, that's where we get stronger. That's when we get faster. That's not why we, that's not happening when we're training. You never leave the gym stronger and faster than when you went into it. Usually it's like you're crawling out of there. You can't walk. A baby will be stealing candy from you, not the other way around.
Yeah. Or some boar in the woods is going to kill your ass. Yeah.
Yeah. So, one other type of training. I guess it's not really training because you're literally just sitting there doing nothing. But about heat adaptation. Is instead of, like, going out in the 100-degree weather and, like, running there, that's a really easy way to overtrain and do a lot of damage to your body because that's, you're talking about multiple stressors on your body, and you're not going to be training at full capacity, so you're really not really getting that much good benefits from it. Is to just do your training, like, maybe go run in the gym that day in a nice air-conditioned spot, and then go sit in the sauna for 20 or 30 minutes. Improving your fitness will make you a more efficient sweater. And then just sweating and being exposed to that 100-plus degree temperature from that sauna will also make you a more efficient sweater. And that's what heat adaptation is all about, is just being a better sweater.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, earlier we talked about being better at recycling lactate. We talked about increasing your VO2 max. Like, doing these training, your body gets better adapted in so many levels. And being a better sweater is really a thing. That's not, like, a made-up thing.
Yeah, it sounds really weird, but what happens is you start losing less electrolytes through your sweat. And then another adaptation that you do is your body will hold on to more blood plasma. That's basically just water in your blood. So when you do start sweating and you do lose some of it, you're not at that much of a detriment.
Yep.
So, like, you do want that. And one thing that will happen with athletes is if you get your red blood cells counted, you might come back as anemic because of the increased blood plasma. So, like, your red blood cell count will be really low percentage-wise.
Just because you have so much plasma.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's called, I think it's like athletic-induced anemia, something along those lines.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, that's like, you know, top-level athletes.
Oh,
like,
I'm sure.
If you took, like, a lot of professional football players, maybe some MMA fighters, like, stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
some of them will come across as anemic, but not really.
Not really. Okay. Yeah. That's cool. Hey, everybody. So, we decided to cut this podcast into two parts because it ended up being extremely long, like multiple hours. So, we decided to end it there. And next week, we're going to start up again. We're going to go over recovery techniques for these long training sessions. We're going to go over training nutrition for the months up to your race. We're going to go over nutritions for game day, specifically what you should eat or drink while on the run, as well as the gear you'll need to be successful during these races. So check out next week's podcast if that interests you. And you can find us at tntwellnessandnutrition.com. Any questions, comments, or concerns, feel free to reach out. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, YouTube, and Stitcher. So feel free to support us if you can. We appreciate all the likes, all the subscriptions, all that stuff. So hope everyone has a happy and healthy week.